Welcome to another edition of Behind the Radio. Today we're focusing on our second semi-professional audio series, A Sprinkle of Stardust. Now, this series has been in development for quite a number of years, and not a lot is known about it at present, simply because we haven't released a lot of information. But the purpose of today's edition of Behind the Radio is simply to dispel a few myths and to let people know a bit about it now that Volume 1, Rugby Money, is in general release on our Ampcast site. With me today I have
Vitol Tietze, the creator of A Sprinkle of Stardust.
And co-writer on the series, I believe.
That is correct.
That you're sharing writing duties with the other well-known BTR scribe, Darren Jordan.
Mm-hmm. Couldn't have done it without him.
No. Vitol, could you tell us a bit about Sprinkle of Stardust? Where did the idea come from?
For once in my life, I can actually tell you where the idea for a series came from. I can't believe this. It came from one occasion when I was reading a few collected Sandman comics. Sandman, the excellent graphic novel by Neil Gaiman. And I started to think, well, okay, he's one of several writers who's created a sort of alternate world, which is the world of dreams. And I thought, well, what if this was taken on a sort of realist bent, as it were, so you don't have fantasy worlds with, as I was mentioning to you earlier today, flying toasters and so forth. Because if you think about dreams, generally, although weird, inexplicable stuff happens that seems perfectly normal at the time, but when you wake up and try to rationalize it, forget it, it doesn't work. Generally, they're in fairly familiar, ordinary environments. They feature ostensibly normal people. It's just that the realism of the situations is sometimes a little heightened. So I started to think, well, what if I could take this in some sort of direction, maybe look at this world of dreams as being a parallel universe of some sort, me being the science fiction fan and not so much fantasy fan. I thought, well, it sounds like a fantasy idea, but what if I could try to rationalize everything scientifically as well? So, although it is essentially a fantasy series and to an extent takes the structure of a fantasy series, I am happy to say that I've been able to pretty much rationalize everything scientifically. We do feature a scientist, a psychology professor, as one of the regulars in the series. So, there is explanation, but there is also mystery and intrigue, especially with regards to certain personages who turn up in the world of dreams every now and then.
You say that the focus of the series is looking at the world of dreams, but does this mean that people can expect a lot of dream imagery to appear in the production, or could it possibly just take the form of a more straightforward drama piece with sort of science fantasy trappings?
Well, it is. I mean, it's interesting that you say that the world of dreams is the focus. It is, to an extent, the conceptual focus. But the narrative focus, I've come to discover while plotting out the first set of stories and while writing the first two scripts, certainly, has been on the characters. I've come to find that these characters are interesting, diverse, sort of rich and multi-dimensional, and I've really come to prefer focusing on more on how the events affect them rather than just focusing on the events and they happen to be ciphers or observers or whatever. So it is, the narrative focus is essentially a character drama with fantasy slash science fiction concepts sort of moving the characters along, and there is a mixture of real world and the dream universe as well, but I wouldn't say that it has out and out fantasy trappings.
Goblins and
no there are certainly times when the distinction between reality and the dream world is, I keep trying to avoid saying dream world because that's the name of a local theme park, where the distinction between reality and the dream world is occasionally blurred. So it is more of a focus on certain intriguing events affecting characters and character relationships and character dynamics is certainly how I like to see it.
So So it's effectively a serious drama series focusing on these characters and the way that they interact and with the extra sort of baggage, I suppose, of the setting and the fantasy.
That's right. The concept. Fantasy element is by and large the catalyst rather than the driving force of the entire series.
Which I think this is what's made it so interesting for our actors, because we've recorded the first two, with the next four being recorded throughout 2004.
Yes.
The actors have really embraced their characters, because in another departure from BTR, what we're trying to do with this series is really focus on our core group of regular characters and have as few incidental guest actors as possible, so that way we can really focus on the dynamics between the characters, their relationships, and their person, like who they are.
It's almost a mirror opposite to Beyond, being a new cast every episode. Here it's by and large the same cast every episode, or permutations on very much the same cast.
And I think that's what's made it so interesting for actors, because they've gotten these characters that they've been able to embrace, and because they're so well written and so well developed, the actors have loved reading these lines, and we've heard nothing but praise from our actors from the dialogue that they've read. They love the scripts, and I think that's transferring across the board, because this brings us to another interesting facet of the production, which with me doing post-production on it, I'm really sort of trying to pull out all the stops on it to make this our most polished work yet, and some very detailed soundscapes, which you'll hear in Volume 1.
And of course you have the extra challenge of much of the soundscape needing to sound realistic, or at the very least naturalistic, so there's more of an emphasis on audience expectations already existing for, say, what a street sounds like, what a beach sounds like,
what a pub sounds like.
That's right. It's not an alien world that you can create from scratch and do however you want.
Exactly. The golden rule with audio post-production is it's the exact opposite of television and film production. For TV and film, realising a real-life location is dead easy. But realising an alien world is the expensive part. For audio, it's the exact opposite. Realising an alien world is very easy, because you can just make some sort of abstract sounding atmosphere. That's right, it sounds quite good.
You can slow down your electric razor if you
exactly,
like.
Exactly, which I have done on previous BTR occasions. But realising real world locations is so much more difficult because of that audience expectation. But having, from the response we've had from people that have heard segments of the post-produced material, the response has been quite positive. But this aspect I wanted to speak about, but we've slightly digressed from, was one of the most interesting and exciting aspects of the entire production, which is the musical side of things.
Right.
We have a fantastic composer in the form of Mr. Trey Lane, whom you might recall did the music on part one of Magical History Tour. Then, for some reason, he promptly vanished off the earth, and about 18 months to 2 years later got back in touch with us and said, "Hey, are you still doing Sprinkle? Sorry about disappearing on the blue like that, but..."
Perhaps he was trapped in the world of dreams.
He could very well have been trapped in the world of dreams, maybe experiencing his own Sprinkle episode. Because he'd already been signed up to do Sprinkle before Magical History Tour.
And certainly before any Sprinkle scripts had been written.
And he got a copy of this first script. Well, he got a copy of the format document. That's right.
Yes.
He got a copy of the format document. And a week later, what did we have? What did I have in my inbox?
We had the title theme.
We had a title theme. I don't know how he managed
this. An excellent one as well.
And that's what's so amazing about it. He read a 3-page overview of the series, including characters and plot synopsis for the 6 episodes that make up the miniseries. And 3 days later, I had an opening and closing theme in my inbox in MP3 format. And I thought, oh, well, I don't know. I hadn't clicked on it. And I thought, oh, this mightn't be too good, because we haven't done any episodes yet. I heard it, and then I was blown away by it. And I sent it to you.
Yes.
You listened to it, blown away by it. We sent Ted to Trey, we're blown away by it. And as a result of that, the theme tune's almost become the embodiment of the ethos and the mythology of the series. It's become the springboard for how we're doing this.
Well, I know that certainly because we had the theme before I started writing the first couple of scripts, I had at least that much in mind, so I knew I had some idea of what the final produced sound style would be like. So I was able to, excuse me, I was able to at least work to that to an extent. I don't think I did sort of a literal artistic translation, which to my mind would mean probably setting the series in the Middle East and having a lot of weird mystical stuff in it. But certainly it was a nice background to have, and at least I wasn't working to a complete production vacuum that way.
Which is, it's always, I think, it's and again, that makes another difference from our usual BTR work.
Mm.
Because usually we do the writing, and then the recording, and then the post-production, and then suddenly the music's the last stage of it. But to suddenly have this music written before we'd done anything else on the series, apart from sit down and nut out the core concepts.
Mm.
But in terms of the series, what else do you think you could tell people about that makes it different? I'm thinking of one element in particular, which was a late addition, almost, that is, we're running this idea across all six CDs, which is the idea of a concept of text chapters.
Ah, yes. That was another nod to an excellent comic book writer this time, Alan Moore, who is known for occasionally including text chapters at the end of issues of his comics. I believe the first time he did it was with Watchmen, and he's been doing it again more recently with League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, which, if anyone watched the movie and hated it, don't give up on the comic. It's a hell of a lot better. So, you know, okay. I thought, okay, we've got a psychology professor here in our regular cast. He's, because of his level of expertise, and he's particularly a dream specialist, he has, I suppose, more of an inkling of, or at least more of a supposition of what might be going on than the rest of the characters, who essentially have not been plucked into this world because of their expertise. As far as we can tell, they've been plucked largely at random. So they're not, I suppose, your doctor character, as it were, who knows all and can explain all. So I thought, well, he'd be a good candidate for doing a text chapter, which gives, as I recall you said, Matthew, during one of the recordings, gives the work an extra textual level that way. It's the notion of giving little snippets of information which don't relate directly to that episode's plot, but which sort of flesh out more information about the world itself and about his hypotheses, and therefore also flesh out more about his character, and which sort of give us those extra little bits of info that will tantalize and intrigue at first, but hopefully will come to explain a little bit more as the series goes on.
And I think what makes this so exciting, for when you explain the whole concept of these text chapters to me, is they're not just some half-baked thoughts that you're just pulling out of the air, that you and Darren and yourself are actually sitting down and researching.
Absolutely.
Doing the full sort of thesis. Mm. These text chapters are every disc will end with another chapter of Kelly Nero, who is the parapsychologist in this. Another chapter of his thesis.
That's right. It's spoken word version, of course, because this is an audio drama and not a comic.
Mm. So, and this has got the full, there'll be full references and in quote chapter text and referencing. And so it's not just some sort of half-baked theory that you're creating.
Yeah. Well, one thing certainly I was keen on, because I want this layering of realism in the series, I want everything, if fictional and fantastical, to at least be grounded in some sort of realism, to therefore have the alleged research of this character grounded in some sort of realism, so there is actual research into dream theory and legends and so forth, which infuses it and gives it, I suppose, an extra layer of authenticity that way.
I think that's what's so fascinating about this, is that on every level the product is having these layers of authenticity, given the real-world setting, the research that you and Darren are putting into for the whole idea of dreams and the subconscious, and like the id and the ego and the superego and all that. Mm. All this sort of stuff is being infused into this one production. So, I mean, it's certainly, I mean, from my mind, it's good value for money, because you're getting a full 60-minute audio drama.
Mm-hmm.
It's just each CD, unlike our Beyond Traditional Recognition series, which is 230 minutes on a disc, this is 160, so each episode is 60 minutes long. So I think even that you found quite liberating.
Liberating and challenging at the same time, actually. I've always found that writing a half-hour script is generally pretty easy. Once you've got one or two core ideas in your characters, it sometimes virtually writes itself. Writing a one-hour script, especially when it's one part of six, is an awful lot more challenging, because suddenly you need a main plot and a subplot. You need something for all your characters to do. It needs to be able to progress for the whole hour. So it does produce a different approach, but the one thing that I found certainly creatively liberating is that when I try and come up with subplots to blend in, because I want them to blend in very effectively with the main plot, what you end up with is, again, more layering of different elements, so that while you've got your main plot telling one story, the subplot tells, although it's telling a different story, it tells a somewhat connected story, which adds extra elements to the main plot, which otherwise wouldn't have been offered in exposition there.
Yeah.
So that's been quite interesting. And what was especially, I think what was especially fun was writing episode 2, which thankfully wrote itself, and I did write the bulk of it in a single day. I'm not ashamed to say. Other writers have worked that quickly, and luckily on this occasion I don't think it impaired the quality at all. Certainly if it had, I would have started from scratch or rewritten or whatever. But that was the biggest liberating experience of all, because of the way I'd structured the story so that it could work to the full hour. The writing of it was probably the most fun I'd had writing something of that length in many, many years.
And I think the other advantage of this is that, I mean, there might be people listening to this now that'll be thinking, oh, I don't really care about text chapters and analysing dreams. I want the story. And the way that the CD has been structured is that you can listen, if you just press play on track one and listen to it until the disc finishes, you get everything. But if you don't want to listen to the text chapters, because the text chapters are a separate chapter on the disc, then you can either just skip straight to that if you want to listen to the chapter before the adventure, and then go back and listen to the drama. Mm. But it's sort of just all, we've designed it so that it's so that the user or the listener chooses what they want to do. Mm. They can either listen to the whole thing, just listen to the drama, or they can skip straight to the chapter and then listen to the drama, or they can just skip straight onto the very last couple of tracks and listen to some series trailers for other stuff that we've produced. Mm-hmm. But I honestly have to admit that it would be a pretty expensive way to get hold of the freely downloadable trailers.
That is true. And I have to say, if anyone's interested in the notion of listening to the text chapters first, because on a narrative level, they're quite separate from the main story on the disc. There's no risk of incurring spoilers or anything by listening to them first. They're only really linked thematically.
Yeah, the text chapters, they're not being, like with any well-written thesis, they don't reference real-world personal events. Mm. It's all designed on an intellectual level to be a discussion and an analysis, yeah, of a particular concept or hypothesis.
It's almost as if they're a hyperlink from, say if someone had written the theme of that episode, you click on the link, this gives you further information.
Speaking of hyperlinks, this touches on another interesting aspect of the development of this series, is that it's the first series we've designed from the ground up to be a full multimedia experience. Do you care
Absolutely.
To explain to people what you envisaged when you mentioned this whole concept to me?
Well, originally the scope that I had for the series was quite small. It was going to be, at least to start with, the 6 audio adventures and then a possibility for more if they do well. But after a while, and I have to admit, I've got more influence from another fantasy source here, I started to read a bit of Tolkien's The Silmarillion, and it occurred to me that he had really very richly and fully developed his entire Middle-earth world. So I thought, well, I've just created a whole extra universe here for this series. How far can I take that? I mean, there's no reason to limit it to 4 main characters and, you know, a year or two out of their lives or whatever it is. So although there may not be much character crossover, certainly the multimedia aspect of the series is that various occurrences in the universe itself that's been established, or in the two universes themselves, can be explored further. I've already started working on a potential film script which, to keep ties close, does feature some of the characters from the radio series. There's the possibility for comic book expansion, novels, you know, websites featuring more theses by Kelly Nero, if we like, you know, probably trading in game cards if we went down that route, though I seriously doubt we would. But
Give Cafe Press 18 months.
Exactly right. So it's the notion of being able to more fully explore a lot of the aspects that are only briefly touched upon in the series for, you know, reasons of keeping to certain narrative focus and also for maintaining mystery and so on. It's almost as if some of the multimedia aspects could be the expansion kit, which explore the universe further, explore aspects and characters and significant figures and significant events further. We can take it far into the future, far into the past. We can look at the dawn of the dream universe. We can look at all sorts of things. So.
I think a good example to give is what the Wachowski brothers did with The Matrix, in terms of they had their core Matrix films, and then they sat down and thought of the idea and did the Animatrix, in terms of the Animatrix, and then with the computer game Enter the Matrix, that neither of these products were necessary to enjoy the trilogy of films. But
that's arguable.
Well, having played the game and watched the Animatrix before I saw the second and third films, I felt that I had benefited from it, but I know people I've spoken to haven't played the game or seen the Animatrix, all the Animatrix films, didn't feel impeded by the when they were watching the other two films in the trilogy. But this whole idea that you've got this core series of 6 episodes in our audio series, but then we can also have little crossover adventures in terms of having, say, Stephanie or Rhonda pop up in a film script which references, which she isn't the lead character, but is a guest character in another film or a comic book that we're doing.
Mm.
And so I think this whole idea of, because we've created an entire universe here, the dream universe, and having that ability to explore it more fully, because that's one of the advantages that we've got at BTR over if we had, say, come up with this idea and then tried to pitch it to a commercial radio network, like, say, the BBC or a television network here in Australia, is that we have the ability to sort of go in any direction we want and explore it more fully. So we can do, we're doing the audio series. BTR Video could then go down and film some short films set in the Sprinkle universe. Mm-hmm. BTR Publishing could do graphic novels or short story collections. Mm-hmm. I mean, the possibilities with this series are endless, and it will continue for as long as, I think, you and Darren have ideas.
It seems that way, doesn't it?
Until we run out of thesis chapters for Kelly Nero.
Exactly. But I must add, while we're on this subject, that certainly the approach we want to take with the multimedia sort of expansion angle is that no one format or no one series is necessarily dependent on the others. And I think the text chapters on the CDs display this, that although they provide more information, you don't have to listen to the text chapter to understand the play. You don't have to listen to the play to understand the text chapter. They're narratively separate, and this will be the case with the bulk of the multimedia stuff. So, you know, if people have a preferred medium they like dipping into, say they prefer films, or they prefer audio, or they prefer comics, or whatever, they can dip into that aspect of the universe and not feel that they have to buy all the other merchandise and go through all that first before even understanding page one.
Because that's what we want to avoid, is creating a universe that's so inward-looking that the only way you can get into it is by purchasing every single release and then progressing through it in a certain order. Mm. Like as you've just said, if you're a film lover, then if we decide to do short films, then you can get those, and they'll be standalone enough that you can enjoy them as films, and they're set in this universe, but then they might provide the impetus for you to go and, say, experience the audio plays or maybe buy a graphic novel whatever. So, Vitol, in summing up, in terms of the next 12 to 18 months for the series A Sprinkle of Stardust, how do you feel it progressing from your perspective as series creator?
So far, I've been incredibly excited by the prospects that we've been developing for this series, and I have to say the parts of it that have gone through various stages of production are all shaping up to be looking and sounding incredibly good, and I really look forward to the possibility of expanding it a lot further, because I mean there's just so many interesting places it can go, and I'd love to go to all of them, quite frankly.
And on that note, Vitor, thank you very much. And everyone, thank you for listening to another edition of Behind the Radio. If you'd like to find out more about A Sprinkle of Stardust, don't forget that you can visit our website at www.ampcast.com/BTR.